This is Fresh Air. David Hockney is one of the best-known artists of his generation. He's in his mid-50s now. Some of his most famous paintings are set in Los Angeles, scenes of swimming pools and the streets of the Hollywood Hills where he lives. Hockney grew up in an industrial town 200 miles north of London, a place so overcast he's described its atmosphere as Gothic gloom. When he first came to L.A. in 1964, he fell in love with the sun, the colors, and the sense of space. Hockney's body of work includes not only paintings, but panoramic photographic collages, stage sets, and faxes. His new book, That's the Way I See It, is a collection of his work and his thoughts about the work. It's a follow-up to his book, David Hockney, My Early Years. In his new book, he says that he broke out of naturalism in the mid-70s after he realized he was in the trap of naturalism. What was the trap?
Well, that was a kind of way of looking at the world that I felt was a little worn. It's really from a camera. I still think that. There's too many photographs. We look at the world through the too many cameras. I felt I needed to do something about that, really. And I'm still doing something about it. I still think we look at the world with too many cameras, really, thinking that is what the real world looks like. And I think, frankly, it's taken a little enjoyment from it. It makes us less curious about its space and so on.
Well, how do you think your painting changed when you tried to stop being naturalistic?
Well, because you start dealing with space in a different way, or shapes in a different way, even from what we call a visible world. What does something really look like? What really is its shape and so on? And you realize if you move, the shapes change and so on. And I don't know, photographs are very static in some ways. And I felt the need to kind of make an attack on it, really, that's all. I mean, just somebody who's making pictures, starting a debate, that's all.
If you were starting a debate, what were the issues?
The issues were what is a realistic representation and so on. What is representation itself? Most representations, you then realize, are abstractions. So the issues are quite complicated and deep, really.
I know you've been losing your hearing and you now have hearing aids in both ears. The common wisdom is that if you lose the power of one sense, you compensate with a deepening power in another sense. Has that been your experience?
Well, I have kind of observed that myself. I pointed it out quite a while back, whereas I became aware of an encroaching deafness. I think at the same time I became very much more aware and much more excited by the idea of illusions of space in pictures. I noticed this was happening quite some time ago, and I assumed it could be like, you know, when blind people use sound to locate themselves in space, to locate space and themselves. I mean, I think that could be happening in another way, but if it's visual, you wouldn't know somebody had this unless they were an artist using it, actually. You could still be having thrilling spatial experiences or feeling them, but you wouldn't do anything about it unless you were an artist, would you?
If you're just joining us, my guest is artist David Hockney, and he has a new book of his work and his thoughts about his work, and the book is called That's the Way I See It. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Artist David Hockney is my guest. He has a new book called That's the Way I See It. In 1990, in an interview in Rolling Stone magazine, you said that your life is a lot sadder than what your paintings suggest. What What are some of the discrepancies between your the mood of your life and the mood in your paintings that you were thinking of?
Well, I was trying to suggest, the interviewer said that your paintings are always happy or something, and I pointed out, well, that doesn't necessarily mean to say I am. Although I know about happiness. I know one only gets little glimpses of it, and that's sufficient to go on. I mean, I'm not naive about it. On the other hand, I think many painters, Van Gogh always really rather painted happy pictures, a lot of them. Doofy did, when Doofy was actually suffering terribly from arthritic hands. He didn't actually tell you about that. He still went joyfully on painting what he thought was a wonderful world. Well, I'm glad he didn't go on about anything else, actually. I think all I'm saying is, you know, you mustn't confuse what is in the art necessarily with the artist. It's not necessarily quite like you think. That's all I think I was saying.
Is the sadness something that you intentionally keep out of the work, or is your work just not like that?
Well, you don't intentionally keep it out. In fact, I think now I can't quite keep it out. Now it comes in various forms. But I think for a while I might have deliberately done trying to, in a sense, still show a lovely joy at the world. Well, I still would want to do that. I still think, actually, the world is beautiful, no matter how sad it gets, really. I accept it as part of life, but I've lost a lot of friends dying more than ever I thought I would in my life. Sometimes if you think about it too much, you're driven nearly crazy. You can't really. You have to stop. Nevertheless, it affects you. I did not expect to have lost that many friends at this age. On the other hand, life goes on and you try and make the best of it, but it's built into me now. I mean, for me, New York City is a changed city because I knew so many people there at one time and they're not there now, so it's for me a changed city, whereas somebody just arriving in it, I'm sure, would enjoy it, but I would find difficulty now. Things like that, really.
I think part of what you're referring to is AIDS, the friends you've lost to AIDS. I know some artists have felt that they've had no choice but to make the subject of their work, at least temporarily, AIDS. And I think you have not gone through that.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I wouldn't be sure how to do it. If I knew how to do it, I might. Or if I felt the need to do it, mm-hmm. I might. But I don't, actually. I don't know whether you can do it in painting really well. I've not seen paintings that made me feel about it too much. Not sure how you do it, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can write a play in a literary concept, literary ideas. It's different. I mean, I'm not sure tragedy is even a visual concept, really. It's a literary concept, isn't it?
You've always been out in the art world, and I know for a lot of artists that's been a difficult thing, and they felt that they needed to basically not be out, to basically stay in the closet. I was wondering if there was ever a period in your career where you tried to keep your sexual orientation a secret from potential patrons and from gallery owners and all that.
Never. I accepted it many, many, many years ago. I accepted it as part of myself, and that was it. Others would have to accept it as well, or we wouldn't be friends. I mean, that's all I did. I've never really been a gay activist, actually. I simply accepted my own sexuality many, many years ago, and others would have to accept it. I saw it as part of the texture of life. I've never felt guilty about it. I'm quite innocent in that way. That's it.
You know, for artists who are gay and aren't out, there's a big impact on their art in the sense that, for instance, if you're writing a song about somebody and you're gay, you have to, and you don't want people to know it, you have to change the gender of the song. So it sounds like if you're a man, it sounds as if you're singing a love song about a woman. And I think, do you know what I mean? That the gender content is often changed because of that. So I guess that's something you didn't have to worry about in terms of portraits.
This is again literary, really, more than a visual thing. It's never bothered me much.
Well, it's not just literary. It's not just literary. For instance, if you're doing a nude portrait, or if you're doing like two men together, and there's feeling they have for each
other. I must admit, I don't think there's such a thing as like gay art. There's only art, really. I mean, many years ago, I went in an art gallery in London with a friend of mine who there were paintings of just girls' legs. And my friend turned to me and he said, David, you know, if there's one thing worse than homosexual art, it's heterosexual art. and I believe that ever since. I think there is only art.
You decided to be a painter, to be an artist, after going to school and having all your teachers encourage you to either be a teacher or go into commercial art. What enabled you inside yourself to have the kind of faith that they were telling you not to have?
I suppose just an inner strength or something. I realize now I've always been, I mean, what you don't realize when you're 16 years old, if you are very clear, I'm leaving one school, I'm very clear, I want to be an artist. I didn't realize that not that many 16-year-olds are that clear and positive about what they want to spend their life doing. I mean, I now realize and look back saying I was quite a lucky person in that sense, being very clear, very, very clear what I wanted to do. There was no hesitations, but I now see that's quite rare. At the time, I didn't think it was rare. I thought, I'm just like everybody else. Look, I want to be an artist, I'll do this. And the next person wants to be a doctor, he'll do that or something.
What impact did it have on you the first time you sold a painting for a couple of $1 million?
Well, I didn't sell it for that
price.
True,
right, that was Sotheby's.
right.
See, that means you didn't get the money either, right?
I didn't get the money. I mean, I frankly have always, there's a side of the art world I always thought was a bit mad, really. I thought the prices were ridiculous, actually, and did a lot of damage, in a way.
What kind of damage?
Well, I think they're all coming down now. Damage in the sense that people were buying, you could see people were paying mad prices for things that didn't make sense to me. You know, you could buy a marvelous 18th century painting for this same price. There was something odd, something mad about it. I used to think it was all drug money, frankly. I did. I thought there must be some explanation, and the explanation isn't connoisseurship or something here. It must be something else, so I just assumed it was all corrupt money.
Well, yeah. I think you've said that you've given paintings as gifts to friends, but at some point, instead of seeing a painting on the wall, they see a lot of money on the wall and they end up selling it.
Yeah, well, that used to happen. And I, at first, used to be a bit angry, and then I realized, you know, you can't expect people who haven't too much money to suddenly, you gave them a drawing many years ago and they're looking at it and suddenly they think, well, I could buy a very nice car with this or something. That's what they do. You see, I don't look at the drawing that way, but I'm a forgiving person.
You do self-portraits.
Pardon?
You've done several self-portraits over the years.
There are periods in my life when I do them, and then there are periods I don't. I think I'm just about to start somehow. I've been drawing my dogs a lot lately.
What goes on in your mind during a period when you do the self-portraits? What leads you to do them?
Just to look at yourself. I mean, I look at myself one morning and think, well, I'm 56 now. Look at my face and you think, well, let me examine it. Drawing it is the best way to do that. They've had periods when I've done it. There was a period in the early 80s when I did it for about 6 weeks. Every single morning I drew myself, whatever way I looked. Amazing difference in moods and things and got. But I think I'm just about to start some now like that, really.
Some people, when they look in the mirror, get very disturbed by what they see. Does that ever happen to you?
No, I accept myself. I like myself. I mean, I don't have any self-hatred, actually. I like myself. I'm fine.
That sounds good. Well, on that note, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
All right. Thank you. Very nice.
David Hockney's new book is called That's the Way I See It. This is Fresh Air.